Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Blitzkrieg broadcast with Kyle Hunt. It is July 5th, 2013. Thank you so much for tuning in this Friday. I am filling in for Siegfried as he was unable to do his show today. Was looking forward to it. I know he had a number of things lined up, so he'll be talking to you guys all shortly, hopefully. Maybe we'll be able to get him on the roundtable tomorrow, and if not... Always wait till next week. Maybe I'll be able to get him on my show sometime soon as well. Actually, my first episode of the Blitzkrieg broadcast was with Siegfried as the guest. So if you didn't listen to that one, go back and check it out. It was a show about white interests, Aryan interests. And this is one of the most important topics, the most important topic that can be discussed, in my opinion, because it really does touch upon so much. It is the real end game of these globalists, of the Jewish elite, of many of these other races, too. Perhaps they actually think that they're going to be living in some kind of paradise after the evil white man is gone and is no longer oppressing them. Yeah, when they're being eaten by their neighbors, barbecued by each other, like the good old days of African cannibalism, which still goes on. Maybe they actually think that Dr. Martin Luther King's dream of a peaceful place for them will come true if they just all love God and Jesus enough and bow down to the Jews and kiss their ass even more. It's not going to turn out that way. I'm here to tell you that there isn't going to be a genocide of the white race. Yeah, sure, perhaps we are being genocided, but we will not be exterminated. Do you actually think that these lowlifes, that these buffoons and baboons, that these Jews are going to be able to exterminate the line of Leonidas that easily, with no opposition? Absolutely not. We are going to reclaim our destiny, and we are in the process of doing so. This is going to be yet another show about this topic, about the very crucial topic that needs to be brought up to every single person on this planet, white or not. People need to know what's going on. People out there in the United States and elsewhere have been convinced somehow that white people are a majority and that they are oppressing all of the poor minorities. They are called minorities. Worldwide, we account for less than 8% of the world's population. And that, and using those demographic statistics is somewhat misleading because they always lump in Hispanics and Jews with those numbers. So it's less. And when you actually consider the number that really matters, the really important one for the survival of our race, well, then that number is 2% of the world's population. And that is that figure is for young white females. Only 2% of the world's population. And they're being handed over to Negroes or to whoever. Whoever is now being put forth as cool and hip and progressive for them to mate with. Our greatest treasure is being squandered. They are taught from a very early age that if they're only to be liking people of their own kind, they're bigoted and racist and just really the epitome of evil. So that is this is my purpose in the world, to bring light to this subject, to advocate for my people, even though many of them right now might hate me for doing so. I don't do it for those people necessarily. I do it for the white children of this world, for the possibility of having a future where our best and brightest are able to procreate profusely. And this is what needs to happen. Our population numbers are dwindling. We are becoming very old, and in many countries, in almost every single white country, there is a flood, an endless flood of dark-skinned people in, which is going to destroy our people. On my last show, I read the 88 Precepts by David Lane, and that should really make it clear why it is an imperative to have lands and resources for the propagation of our people. You cannot survive without a place for your people, a homeland. Well, perhaps the Jews were able to figure out something with their wandering about type of methods, but that's a different story. Currently, if you go over to Sweden and you look in one of their little classrooms, it'll be a bunch of Arabs. The whole thing will be filled with Arabs, depending on where you are. You go to Ireland, it'll look like Somalia in one of the schools. Same thing in England. The United States, of course, depending on what school you're in, it might be almost completely black. And then if you try to get away to one of those white schools or historically white schools, it's no longer that way because they forced a busing at bayonet point using the 101 airborne against young white girls, young white women who were against making it so that education is colorblind. And not only that, you know, now there's the whole affirmative action. Oh yeah, in South Boston as well, they actually beat up white women. I mean, absolutely bloodied them in order to enforce the non-segregated schools. So we are battling for our very survival, and it does seem like the odds are stacked against us. They are spending billions and billions and trillions in order to kill us off, breed us out, and disenfranchise us completely to make sure that we have no place left to go. So, if flight is no longer an option, people, I guess it's time we start to fight. And that's what this really comes down to. You have to fight for your survival and not plead or pray or apologize to get somewhere. No, we're going to have to be tough, hardened, and absolutely adamant that we are going nowhere. Oh, well, we're going somewhere. We're rising, but we're not moving one damn inch. Standing your ground, damn right. So I have a lot lined up for this this show tonight. I've got some more readings by David Lane. I've got some audio clips to play, some songs perhaps, a lot that I put together here in the, kind of at the last minute for this show to fill in. So you guys all have something to listen to on a Friday evening. I'm trying to search for a song here in the studio, but not working out for me. And so what I think I will do is instead go to a clip. So I'll preface this clip by saying every single time that I go to log into Blog Talk Radio right now, right there on the front page, I am greeted by a smiling black face. And that black face belongs to, well, his owners. But it belongs to Mr. Tavis Smiley. And I'm not seeing that clip uploaded here either for some reason. But this is all wonky right now. But Tavis Smiley is just one of the many black hosts that is promoted on Blog Talk Radio. They really seem to like to promote all the black people. You're almost never going to see a smiling white man's face unless it's some stupid celebrity of the Jewish media that's a guest on one of the programs. WWE Superstar. Yeah, my internet's just going really slow. Hey, guys in the chat, over at renegadebroadcasting.com, can you even hear me right now? Am I coming through all right? Nobody's chatting in there, so I don't even know. Oh, jeez. You know, it would be very nice if we could actually have like a real studio, real base of operations, legitimate technology with which to put these shows together with. So you know that damn well that's not the case. We're not being supported by all these different interests that really are hell-bent on our destruction. So we have to make do with what we've got, and what we've got is not a lot. But we've got passion. We don't have the money. We don't need all of their Jew money. We have spirit and passion, and we know how to get a fire started. All right, I was able to bring up that clip, and so I mentioned Tavis Smiley. He's always there smiling at me as I come into Blog Talk Radio. And some years ago on his BET show, he had on a Mr. Larry Elder, and they were talking about racism. And I thought it was a pertinent conversation. Larry brings up some good points. I'm only going to play a bit of this clip, and I'll come back and discuss it a little bit more. But this is Larry Elder on the Tavis Smiley Show, and he does bring up how blacks, I guess, are more anti-Semitic than whites and how that's really a bad thing. So take from it what you will.
An example of hatred that blacks have against whites. They consider that to be a nutcase.
That's what he was, Larry.
I agree.
He wasn't racist, he was a nut.
I absolutely agree with that. But if we want to take the argument that you look at something an individual does, like those people did to James Byrd, and then create a case that there's a lot of racism against black people, you could do the same thing with crime blacks commit against whites. If you look at violent interracial crime, black-white crime, there are about a million acts of violent black-white crime any given year. And by violent, I mean rape, murder, robbery with aggravation, manslaughter. About 90% of that involves a black perpetrator, and 90% involves a white victim.
But you're half right, Larry, because as you well know, so you don't tell the whole story. The other part of the story is that I've heard you before this argument. You won't admit this. Most crimes committed against whites are committed by other whites. Most crimes committed by blacks are committed by other blacks.
Well,
what's your point?
It depends on the category of crime. Almost half.
So you're picking one or two categories.
Almost half of certain categories of crime committed by blacks are in fact against white people. But the point is this, Tavis. When you look at the percentage of blacks in the population, blacks are committing far more crime against whites than the other way around, way more. Look at polling data, anti-Semitism. The good news is that in America, anti-Semitism is at an all-time low. However, in the black community, the anti-Semitic rate is almost three times higher than in the non-black community.
I don't want to move down this list, but I still think, though, that does a disservice to the facts. If most crimes committed against whites are committed by whites, most crimes committed against blacks are committed by blacks, I think you're doing a disservice if you're not representing. It's intellectual dishonesty.
Almost half of the victims of black crime are, in fact, white people. Almost half. The victims of white crime almost are very rarely black people. It just isn't true. When you look at black-white crime, blacks are committing a lot more crime against whites than the other way around, even when you adjust for the percentage of the population.
Dr. King said all the time, as you well know, King's definition, who is an expert, obviously, on violence. Dr. King, who I think we both respect here, King's argument was that racism, his definition was this, racism equals prejudice plus power. Racism is defined as prejudice plus power. You didn't buy that argument? You didn't buy that definition? Because the point is, if racism equals prejudice plus power, black folk who are powerless by and large, who can be prejudiced but don't have the power to be racist.
That is one of the most idiotic things I've ever heard.
Calling King an idiot?
When Reginald Denny...
Are you calling King an idiot?
When Reginald Denny was on the ground and Damian Football Williams had a brick in his hand and was trying to kill him, did Reginald Denny face somebody who had power? I think so. So what an absurd thing to say. You don't have power, therefore you can't be a bigot. When State Senator Diane Watson blasted Warren Carterly, the black man who championed the cause of eliminating affirmative action, she said to him, because he's married to a white woman, let me tell you something. The reason you're supporting the abolition of affirmative action is because you have no ethnic pride. You're married to a white woman. You want to be white. Now, was she racist because she didn't have power? Was she not racist because she didn't have power? It doesn't make any sense. Black people...
All right, enough of those guys talking about racism. Racism is actually a great thing. It means the promotion, defense, support of, love of your race, just as any other ism means that, like nationalism, a racist, a nationalist, right? These are terms that we need to bring back to embrace. Racism. Oh, you're racist. Instead of just always being defensive, saying, "Oh, I'm not racist. I just think that the immigration is the problem." Just say, tell them the mantra if you want. Tell them anti-racist is a code word for anti-white, which it is. I'm against racism because you know what? In the world that we live in right now, only white people are considered racist. You're not even able to really be racist unless you're white, using their definition of racist, which means somebody who wants to, you know, kill 6 million Jews, who wants to see black babies murdered everywhere. That's what they're putting out there as, you know, what a racist is. And they always are the ones to define what racial pride means, right? They're the ones who create the characters that are given to us on the TV. If they're going to do a History Channel special about the KKK or something, or they're going to show some kind of racist, it's always the most ludicrous example, a pot-bellied idiot saying utter nonsense instead of actually speaking with people who are intelligent, well-spoken, and come from different backgrounds than just being what most people would see as trailer trash. For example, a person like myself, I was valedictorian of my high school, sports star in a number of things, number of sports. I was... I graduated college with honors, double major. I've worked with some well-known companies. Or rather, a very well-known company. I've done a lot that has shown me the way that things really are. The enforced diversity. The just love of minorities and our women, and hatred of white men. They've divided, they've cornered off white men, and they put them into this category where they get all of the white women to hate them along with the minorities. The white man is the epitome of just awfulness. Such a criminal, seedy character. Oh, wow. And it flies in the face of what actual experiences show. People believe their experiences with the TV over the real life. And that's how they create this false reality for us, in which the black man is a heroic success story, you know, coming from these years of oppression. Oh, look at that rap star. He's so cool. Look at that black athlete. He is so strong. And it's just such a disgusting circus to behold. You know, there's an interesting statistic that I learned from a David Duke video one time. And that is that I think in the past Summer Olympics, the amount of the top 10 fastest sprinters were all black. The top 10 power lifters were all white. Okay, so equality is completely bullshit at every single level. I don't need to tell you guys this, but it's self-evident, if you're paying any attention, that certain races have different particular characteristics, some strong suits, some things that they are better than others at. But you're not really going to see this as much being displayed actually at the Olympics along the national lines, because our nations, like the United States, are filled up with every single kind of human, if you're willing to use that word, there is. So it's completely diverse. It's like a McDonald's commercial. With just a bunch of homos and never actually seeing the fat people actually eat there. But you're just going to see every single different kind of happy, smiling person. How ironic that McDonald's sponsors the Olympics, right? Or even that McDonald's sponsoring Avatar, if you remember that. A movie about, you know, pagan roots and embracing your hunter side, right? Oh yeah, go hunt down a Big Mac. There you go. I'm going to play another clip here. This is related to the recent 4th of July. Mike did a great show last night. For the 4th, thank you to him for doing that. I hope you guys all check that out. But this news story came out the day after some fireworks on the 4th of July, a few years ago, I think it was. And I'll be back in just a bit. Well, I'm not hearing it yet. Maybe it will play.
City of Akron is asking the FBI to determine whether race was the motive for an attack on a family watching fireworks. The parents and two children are white. Their attackers, 30 to 50 African-American teens. Channel 3's Dave Summers joins me now. Dave, why are federal investigators getting involved?
Well, Ramona, it's a matter of jurisdiction. If this is a civil rights violation or hate crime, federal investigators will take over the case. City Hall has received so much heated reaction to this attack, the mayor and police department seem most concerned about proceeding by the book. The real fireworks flew for Marty Marshall and his family after the 4th of July celebration at Firestone Park.
Kids coming out of nowhere and just jumping on top of my husband.
I had anywhere from 10 to 15 kids sitting there kicking, hitting me.
I was just hoping and praying that they weren't going to kill anybody.
And a couple of them, and not the whole group, but a couple of them said, it's a black world.
The family was attacked in the front yard of a friend's home at the corner of Gerald and Ivy Street. Marty says the family was jumped by 30 to 50 African-American teenagers who had just left Firestone Park. Daughter Rachel says it's left her paralyzed with fear.
I'm scared. I don't want to go anywhere. I want to be home.
Marty spent 4 days in the hospital with head, neck, and shoulder injuries.
This couldn't be possibly happening.
Longtime friend and neighbor to the Marshalls, Quay Andrews, says the obvious racial undertones of this assault puts everybody, including her kids, in jeopardy.
I hope it's not a hate crime, but what it sounded like, it sounded like it was a hate crime. I just want something to be done about it because no telling who they'll jump next.
Channel 3 News obtained a copy of this letter sent from the Akron mayor's office to the FBI. It asks for a determination whether this is a hate crime and therefore the responsibility of federal investigators.
Just hoping they can get down to the bottom of this, find them, prosecute them.
You want answers, and you're not sure if you're going to get the answers. But it makes you feel safer knowing that somebody is listening.
Akron police are investigating, and reportedly the gang unit is also involved. No suspects have been arrested, Ramona, but the family says they could most certainly identify some of the young teenagers involved in this if they see them.
Now, how did this all start? Were there words exchanged? Did they know these teens?
We have only the Marshall's account at this point, but based on that, the family had no prior contact with the teenagers. It started when one of the attackers, without warning, hit from behind a family friend. Marty jumped in front to protect his family and friends and was swarmed by the growing group of teenagers in the yard. Certainly not something you hear, you know, normally, and not something police investigate normally either.
Disturbing. All right, Dave, thank you.
This is the kind of thing that happens everywhere, all the time, and we don't hear about. You'll hear about Trayvon Martin and Zimmerman, but you're not going to hear about in the same town just this year in Sanford, Florida, where this took place, about Ashley Flurney, who was 6 months pregnant and then was beaten by a group of all black people, a massive group, a gang of them, and 4 minors. But you're not going to hear about that. They knocked out her husband and then beat the crap out of her, putting her in the hospital. One of them was reported to have yelled out, "I don't care if you're pregnant." In the same town, a 50-year-old white man was actually pulled out of his car by 2 gangsters. And then he was dragged off into the woods and beat with a hammer. He almost died. But are you going to even hear this on Fox News? And so this is just one town. One town. This kind of thing. Wilding out, rioting, race riots happens all over, but you don't hear about it. There's a book out there now about this. I haven't read this. It's called White Girl Bleed a Lot, about how the media doesn't cover it. It probably doesn't point out how the media is completely Jewish controlled, but at least this kind of thing is being brought to the public light. And it's possibly going to lead to what I would consider something of a racial civil war, unless things are somehow diffused properly. I see almost no other way around, and it's just a question then of what sides come out on top. And I would have to say that although we are in a sorry state, white people are still pretty tough. And we have the blood of Vikings and Teutons, Teutonic warriors, Celts, running through our veins. And that's why they've really pushed the pussification of the white man so much, so that he's no longer even able to defend himself. But it's also to make sure that no white woman will ever view him as a dominant male, which she is always going to be attracted to. No, you're going to have to go towards those black football stars. Now, back to being able to defend yourself and the clip that I just played. If those people had been armed, a few of them, well, then they wouldn't have actually been beaten, but some dangerous youths would have been put down, and a good example would have been set to, for the rest of them that managed to run away after trying to beat their whole family to death. So that is why they're also coming for our guns. White America is very well armed. And also, although not in the cities, not among the elite and the brain dead, there is a strong resistance to the system, even if it isn't properly identified, amongst white, somewhat militant America. Do not discount these people. Do not count out the white man just yet. Actually, this ties into a short clip that I wanted to play, which it's from a black man's perspective about what would happen in a race war. So I'll be right back.
You understand what I'm saying? These little young niggas out here, they're going to be fish food, okay? They're going to be fish food. They got little seven-year-old boys shooting choppers, putting a motherfucking bullet through the motherfucking the bull's eye. These motherfuckers out here will shoot a whole motherfucking clip and won't hit a motherfucking thing. Man, you go on YouTube right now, they got white women that the white man did train, 12 years old, shooting a motherfucking AR-15, hitting the bullseye every time she pulled the trigger, and a bitch-ass nigga concocted the motherfucker, shoot the whole clip, and don't shoot nobody, or shoot a motherfucker that he wasn't even aiming for. So if you know, in a military situation, that ain't no bullets out here. So if it's a shortage on bullets, that means every time you pull the trigger, you got to put it through a motherfucking head. Period. You ain't got no time to be wasting ammunition. You don't. These crackers is spitting on niggas. They ready to go to war. What is niggas going to do? Niggas ain't going to do shit. They're going to go get their motherfucker. They're going to get their weed. They're going to play their video game. And when the crackers come down in the hood and say, bitch, load up in the truck, your ass is getting up in the truck.
Well, that man made some points there. I know a lot of white women and white girls who are being trained how to use weapons well from a very early age. This used to be much more prominent within our culture and will become prominent yet again with real education instead of education that we have these days. Real learning, imparting of wisdom, knowledge. And letting people figure it out for themselves as well, because our people are very ingenious, creative, inventive. And that is another reason you should not count out the white race. We are inventors. We are builders. We are warriors. So anybody out there who wants to talk tough on Twitter about how if Zimmerman is acquitted, they're going to go out and kill crackers, you know, you can try, but some of those crackers are still well-armed and very much willing to defend themselves. So perhaps we'll end up with some more punks, some more gangsters dead. They've been killing themselves for a while in their gang violence, killing white people. But perhaps they will become targets, actually within their own race, within their more responsible members of their race, who will start to, I guess, hopefully understand that these kind of people cannot be tolerated. And I'd like to see the United States cleaned up. Right now, it is a cesspool. And being able to defend yourself is how you survive in a cesspool. Well, you shouldn't have to survive in a cesspool, and I guess that analogy isn't a perfect one, but I think you get my point. As to looking towards the future with a more optimistic outlook, I read something over on Mind Weapons in Ragnarok, which you can go visit by going to mindweaponsinragnarok.com, that somebody had posted in the Renegade chat earlier today, and I think it's spot on. The race mixers being taken out of the gene pool in order to create the virulent strain, which will then be unleashed on the planet. The 2050 apocalyptic date could very well be quite the opposite that the left is hoping for. It's funny how the left thinks that making whites a minority and attacking us on a moral, legal, and finally physical level will make us go quietly into the night. I almost said financially instead of finally physically, but financially could very well be added in there. Because jobs are denied to us based on our race. That is affirmative action. Continuing on with this. That's a big gamble, quite frankly. The old tiger by the tail. The tiger is already gaining consciousness, as Stormfront shows. Nature does not favor the weak, ever. And leftist ideology seems to be an attempt to defeat nature and hand victory over to the weak and unfit. It is the left that is trying to build the Tower of Babel or beat the ocean into submission, not us. In attacking us, they are only killing off our weaker, liberal, submissive, race mixer specimens. The strong remain and get stronger and more fanatical. I've been part of this movement for 10 years, and I've seen the white race and the white nationalist movement grow stronger, more deeply rooted, more fanatical. The trend is most definitely going our way. I would say that anybody out there who doesn't understand that a tsunami is coming might just get swallowed up by it. So if they don't know how to swim and don't want to be washed away, get out of the way. A tsunami is coming. I made the analogy on my last show of a snowball's chance in hell becoming an avalanche. I think that is appropriate as well. And they're going to start having to deal with us. They are doing it. More attention will be paid to people in our movement that might have doctor in front of their name. I've interviewed a few, Dr. Tom Sunick, Dr. Kevin McDonald. As I said before, they always want to make it look like the idiots are the ones running this this movement, a general white nationalist or nationalist, racially aware type of segment of society. And it is not being controlled by them whatsoever. We need to get rid of those idiotic elements within our midst. No longer are we at the point where we just need to take anybody we can get. No, we need to be discriminating and value the elite. Kai Muros is not even allowed to have his voices expressed at certain universities where he was scheduled to give a speech. He's not allowed in. I believe at Oxford, he wasn't allowed to attend a speech. His ideas are just that dangerous. And they're getting out. And there's really nothing that our controllers, or so they thought they were our controllers, can do about it. They can perhaps try to kill off a few of us, but that will only make the fanatics more fanatical. So I guess it's time to read from another person that they don't want us to know a whole lot about. Know really what he wrote about, what he said, what he stood for. And that would be David Lane. On my last show, I read his poetry and the 88 Precepts. So if you didn't hear that yet, you can go check that out. I've also covered the Brüder's Schweigen a little bit, otherwise known as The Order, on a show previously as well. This first piece is called Crossing the Rubicon. Over 2,000 years ago, Julius Caesar led his army across the Rubicon River into Italy to wage war with rival forces loyal to Pompey, or Pompey. Pompous asshole. Once across the river, there was no turning back. It was war to the death, winner take all. So for over two millennia, the phrase crossing the Rubicon has signified a dangerous commitment from which there was no turning back. Now, as these words are being penned on the historically significant days of April 19th and 20, another Rubicon is crossed. It has long been my policy not to name names when discussing treachery of so-called leaders of the alleged resistance to the forced mixing and murder of the white Aryan race. It is counterproductive to get in the middle of the never-ending bickering. Furthermore, who is it to know what is in the hearts of others? But now, as our race slides into the abyss of extinction at breakneck and exponentially increasing pace, some lines must be drawn, some rules must be set, and every aware Aryan must cross his or her personal Rubicon. The fence sitters, the lukewarm, the hobbyist, and the CRAP, the crap, the Christian right-wing American patriots, either do nothing or they continue the exact same losing and genocidal tactics as their predecessors over the last century or more. Those who speak and act with the eloquence of emergency and the fanaticism of desperation, with their focus on racial survival as elucidated in the 14 words, are friends. All others, at best, are blobs of inconsequential protoplasm and, more likely, mortal enemies. The cowardice and treason of sports figures, judges, lawyers, politicians, and preachers is as nothing compared to the treachery of right-wingers and conservatives who use duplicity to mislead potential opposition to genocidal tyranny. When the deceivers are called to task, they reply that they are sneaking up on the Jew by attacking his front men and the tentacles of the Hydra. Of course, they're bogeymen like Masons, Trilateralists, Bilderbergers, the Council on Foreign Relations, etc., are precisely the devices by which the Zionist insulates himself from attack, as are his puppet politicians like Bill Clinton and George W. Bush. One cannot fight an enemy if one does not even have the courage to identify him. That the vast majority of white wing and right wing leaders are paid government shills, paid government agents hired to identify and mislead the disaffected, is now a conclusion that is difficult to deny. But then, such deception by those in power is a practice as old as governments. So why would any sane person think today would be an exception? Before tearing into the deceivers of the CRAP with an anger that has been repressed for decades, it is vital to remember religious, political, and economic systems can be destroyed and rebuilt, but the death of our race will be eternal. The race of Edison, Bell, Shakespeare, Marconi, Galileo, Kipling, Tesla, Rockwell, and Matthews now goes the way of the dinosaurs because the crap loved the empty words of constitutions, the lies of politicians, both past and present, and unholy holy books more than the reality of the flesh and blood of their own kind. The beauty of the white Aryan woman perishes from the earth forever because egotistical cowards found it safer to tilt with windmills, to discuss economics, or anything but identify the Zionist colossus that rules the world and has sentenced the white race to death. A bane upon them. May all the vile curses ever sworn in every language ever spoken befall them. May they be buried beneath outhouses, wrapped in their constitutions and flags, that they receive fitting tribute for ages to come. Bob Matthews did not sacrifice his life, and others and I do not rot forever in prisons so that the unjustified egos of cowards and deceivers can be mollycoddled. Be they knights of the inkpot or agents of Zog, they deserve no honor. Leaders? How about Mark Thomas, identity preacher from Pennsylvania, who turned over and testified against his own recruits? How about Glenn Miller, who testified under oath that he received hundreds of thousands of dollars from the Order Brüders Schweigen? He was an identity teacher and white patriot. He testified against his own recruits and against the order. How about Tom Martinez? He was a leader of a national alliance group. He claimed he accepted money from the Brüders, then testified against us after betraying Bob Matthews. How about Pastor Dan Gaiman? He's an identity pastor who gave the government thousands of dollars he said he received from the order, then testified against us, yet he remains a major crap leader. How about the top three leaders of an identity community called CSA, Covenant, Sword, and Arm of the Lord? Their names are James Ellison, Terry Noble, and Randall Rader. All three testified against their own recruits and against the Brüders. Ellison testified against his own recruit, Richard Snell, who was subsequently executed by the Arkansas State Zog. How about Pastor Millar, leader of an identity community called Elohim City? Pastor Millar now harbors the vile traitor James Ellison and even had him married into his family. Pastor Millar, who has been identified in sworn testimony as a paid FBI asset, is another major CRAP leader. How about certain other leaders of the White Wing who were identified in testimony to have received large sums of money from the Brüders but refused to support them, who have never sent money for stamps or necessities, who do not even send their publications to the POWs, who will not give the Brüders a voice? Is it fear or are they Zog agents? You have to wonder who they are. Well, the Brüders do not talk, but we do remember. And we have lots of time to reflect on the concept of justice. How about Bo Gritz, self-proclaimed assassin on behalf of the CIA? Why were his assassinations not against those who could deliberately and maliciously exterminate our race? Could it be because he has a Negro godson, or because his first wife was Oriental, as are his sons, or because he is a member of the Jewish Defense League? Are you surprised that he declares his covenant community is open to all races? Are you surprised that he wore an FBI bug as he attempted to set up the Weavers at Ruby Ridge? There is no better known or influential crap leader than the arch-race traitor Bo Gritz. How about the leader who promotes a new and different 14 words? In 1836, would he have changed "Remember the Alamo" to "We must change the thinking of Texans"? Should one dilute a sacred motto? How about all those leaders who shall remain unnamed, who spent the majority of their time attacking other alleged leaders, or whose issues are at best peripheral to racial survival? While the known, proven traitors must never be forgotten, there is no use for endless gossip, bickering, and personality conflicts to become public debate. How about the militia? It smelled fishy when it sprang up overnight. Only governments can organize such instantaneous events. The three best publicized militia leaders testified before Congress a couple of years ago in a carefully orchestrated Zog television farce. Two of the three leaders have admitted being on the federal payroll, according to published reports. Whether that is true or not is of no consequence because the third leader was a Negro with a white wife. So the three comrades sent two clear messages to our folk. First, of course, they were sanctioning marriage between colored males and what are becoming the last white women. Secondly, they were declaring to the white man that he shall have no exclusively white organizations for the preservation of his race. So all suicidal white lemmings rush to join the militia. It is safe, is approved. It is genocide for Aryans. It is often suggested not to tackle the crap, particularly don't discuss Christianity or the Bible. Well, there are still people to reach. Nothing is gained by preaching to the choir, not even a wokeness choir. I do not wish to rehash the same old litany of despair that the right wing has done for decades. The folk need ammunition with which to counter the sea in crap. A wise man knows his enemy's rule book, so it is imperative to understand that the Bible, and particularly the English language, King James Bible, really is. There are some things that identity adherents of good heart and Bible believers in general must understand. First, when the religion from Rome was imposed on Northern and Western Europe, it was done by torture, murder, bribery, and deceit. So adepts or priests in the old Aryan mystery or pagan religions simply infiltrated the church. In particular, during the Dark Ages, as monks or lesser clergy, they kept alive the art of reading and writing, as well as science and philosophy. The church began by killing scientists and philosophers and burning libraries, thus engendering the Dark Ages of disease, superstition, slavery, inquisitions, and misery. Second, Bible scholars recognize that throughout the ages, the great nature philosophers developed coding devices to both preserve and conceal their wisdom, so it not be misused by tyrants. Examples of their coding devices include, but are far from limited to, the architecture of the seven wonders of the ancient world, including the Great Pyramid at Giza, gematria, cryptograms, and hermetic number pyramids. The KJV is a supreme example of their art of coding. That's the King James Version of the Bible. Third, the Bible is comprised of many writings from many ages and many authors, which are then divided into conflicting testaments or philosophies. The adepts who constructed it were, of course, under the scrutiny of higher ecclesiastic authorities, and therefore had to be extremely careful regarding what to write, what to translate, and how to do so. So apologists for the Bible's thousands of direct contradictions should quit wasting their time studying dead languages and attempting to turn the last generation of young white men into monkish, love thine enemies, turn the other cheek scholars. Monks are the last thing we need right now. Many Bible errors, especially those of a mathematical nature, are deliberate constructions designed to call attention to the coding system. For example, the difference in the number and names of patriarchs in Matthew 1 and Luke 3, with 14 more in Luke. Fourth, there is great significance in the meaning of God said. These two words are the tools of priestcrafters and can be used for either good or evil. The oldest book of the KJV, Job, is probably a Persian book, circa 400 BCE, and the protagonists were likely called Ahura Mazda and Ahriman in the original, rather than God and Satan. In Job 12:7-9, there is advice to look in nature for truth because nature is God's work. That is the essence of Wotanism and all ancient Aryan pagan religions. The great nature philosophers then, after meticulous study of nature, determined that the first, the primal, the absolute and highest law is preservation of one's own kind. Now, the masses, being too lazy to study nature and demanding always that an authority figure give them moral codes, the nature philosophers created religious mythologies in which God said what nature declared. In the case of the Israelite scenario, where they are commanded to drive out or exterminate all other races from the lands they conquer, it is simply an honest interpretation of the territorial imperative necessary for racial preservation, with nature's declaration metamorphosized into God said. It makes no difference who claims to be Israelites today. It is mythology combined with many ancient stories of both Aryan design and, as is the case of Esther, Jewish design. The point is the philosophy. Jews followed the philosophy of the Old Testament and conquered the world. It teaches taking power, plunder, and taking women. Its rewards and punishments are for the whole tribe and within the reality of this world. See Deuteronomy 28. In accord with natural law, its moral absolute is preservation of one's own kind, as demonstrated by all living things. Genesis 19, especially verse 32, makes it clear that all secondary laws, be they about sex, money, government, or anything else, must conform to the first or primal law, the preservation of the seed line. Secondary laws are the invention of men, and they may change as fits the age or the circumstances. But reproduction and preservation of one's own kind supersedes all else. Fifth, it is time to face reality, to demand literal belief in the supernatural and impossible religious myths of antiquity is to remain dismally ignorant of the truths of science and nature. Religious mythologies have a purpose, sometimes good, sometimes bad, but only the credulous and simple-minded take them literally. The credulous will never conquer the cunning minions of Zog. Sixth, the New Testament, lock, stock, and barrel, is racial suicide. The overt content was invented by degenerate Romans and Jews to emasculate the Aryan race. While the Old Testament has picked up traces of Jewish poison over the ages, its core has many similarities to other ancient Aryan religions. For example, heroic battle deeds, the seizing of women, the slaying of giants, and tricking of enemies are typical of Greco-Roman and Norse religions. But almost nothing of the New Testament philosophy is remotely Aryan. John 18:36, "My kingdom is not of this world," is its major poison. The few verses, transparent frauds used to tie the two testaments together, cannot reconcile diametrically opposing philosophies. The New is saturated with suicidal, anti-nature, and anti-sex concepts designed to propagate the insane idea of original sin. This so that priestcrafters could have both a carrot and a stick, i.e. heaven and hell, 1 Corinthians 7, Revelation 14. All Aryan religions were fertility religions because lust, sex, and reproduction are nature's plan for the survival of each race and species. Seventh, the coding system of the KJB, I think he had KJV before, but regardless. Seventh, the coding system of the KJB is undeniable under the mathematical laws of probability. It conceals two basic precepts of the ancient mystery schools and religions. By meticulous study of nature and its geometry, cycles, spacings, etc., the The philosophers postulated a force and intelligence which they called the grand mathematician geometrician of the universe. The second precept teaches that the words of men can forever be twisted, interpreted, and translated, but the relationship of number is constant forever. These are the reasons why KJB is a number code. To reiterate the seemingly obvious, there is no time for self-delusion or escapism, or for attacking each other without absolute proof and undeniable necessity. All men are defenseless against character assassination, so why pay attention to it, regardless of the source? It is the law that we obey, not other men. The law, the primal law, the moral absolute, the divine command, is the preservation of one's own kind. Each and every aware white Aryan must cross the Rubicon. Each must help to make the concept underlying and permeating the 14 words into a sacred battle cry. It is God's will and command, no matter what name you use for the absolute. All right, hope that came through well enough. I'm actually going to start off the second hour here with some audio and bring that up here. It is in it is about the birth rates of our nations. I played on a previous show before. I would like to do so again because it is very important and shows just where we are going. So I will be back shortly.
According to research, in order for a culture to maintain itself for more than 25 years, there must be a fertility rate of 2.11 children per family. With anything less, the culture will decline. Historically, no culture has ever reversed a 1.9 fertility rate. A rate of 1.3, impossible to reverse, because it would take 80 to 100 years to correct itself, and there is no economic model that can sustain a culture during that time. In other words, if two sets of parents each have one child, there are half as many children as parents. If those children have one child, then there are one-fourth as many grandchildren as grandparents. If only 1 million babies are born in 2006, it's hard to have 2 million adults enter the workforce in 2026. As the population shrinks, so does the culture. As of 2007, the fertility rate in France was 1.8, England 1.6, Greece 1.3, Germany 1.3, Italy 1.2, Spain 1.1. Across the entire European Union of 31 countries, the fertility is a mere 1.38. Historical research tells us these numbers are impossible to reverse. In a matter of years, Europe as we know it will cease to exist. Yet the population of Europe is not declining. Why? Immigration. Islamic immigration. Of all population growth in Europe since 1990, 90% has been Islamic immigration. France, 1.8 children per family. Muslims, 8.1. In southern France, traditionally one of the most populated church regions in the world, there are now more mosques than churches. 30% of children ages 20 and younger are Islamic. In the larger cities such as Nice, Marseille, and Paris, that number has grown to 45%. By 2027, one in five Frenchmen will be Muslim. In just 39 years, France will be an Islamic republic. In the last 30 years, the Muslim population of Great Britain rose from 82,000 to 2.5 million, a 30-fold increase. There are over 1,000 mosques, many of them former churches. In the Netherlands, 50% of all newborns are Muslim, and in only 15 years, half of the population of the Netherlands will be Muslim. In Russia, there are over 23 million Muslims. That's one out of five Russians. 40% of the entire Russian army will be Islamic in just a few short years. Currently in Belgium, 25% of the population and 50% of all newborns are Muslim. The government of Belgium has stated one-third of all European children will be born to Muslim families by 2025, just 17 years away. The German government, the first to talk about this publicly, recently released a statement saying, "The fall in the German population can no longer be stopped. Its downward spiral is no longer reversible. It will be a Muslim state by the year 2050. Muammar al-Gaddafi of Libya said, "There are signs that Allah will grant victory to Islam in Europe, without swords, without guns, without conquest. We don't need terrorists. We don't need homicide bombers. The 50-plus million Muslims in Europe will turn it into a Muslim continent within a few decades." There are currently 52 million Muslims in Europe. The German government said that number is expected to double in the next 20 years to 104 million. Closer to home, the numbers tell a similar story. Right now, Canada's fertility rate is 1.6, nearly a full point below what is required to sustain a culture. And Islam is now the fastest growing religion. Between 2001 and 2006, Canada's population increased by 1.6 million, 1.2 of those immigration. In the United States, the current fertility rate of American citizens is 1.6. With the influx of the Latino nations, the rate increases to 2.11, the bare minimum required to sustain a culture. In 1970, there were 100,000 Muslims in America. Today, there are over 9 million. The world is changing. It's time to wake up. 3 years ago, a meeting of 24 Islamic organizations was held in Chicago. The transcripts of that meeting showed in detail their plans to evangelize America through journalism, politics, education, and more. They said, "We must prepare ourselves for the reality that in 30 years, there will be 50 million Muslims living in America. The world that we live in is not the world in which our children and grandchildren will live." The Catholic Church recently reported that Islam has just surpassed their membership numbers. Some studies show that at Islam's current rate of growth, in 5 to 7 years, it will be the dominant religion of the world.
Rather alarming, no? This isn't fear-mongering. This is dealing with reality. Back to David Lane for a short piece here called The White Genocide Manifesto. And it was preceded by some writing, but I'm just going to get down to the heart of it. "Therefore, we, the Aryan body of those people identified historically and properly as the Aryan or white race, declare the following. 1. All existing governments in the once white political states now deny us hegemony and the exclusive territorial imperatives necessary to our survival as a biological and cultural entity. 2. The inevitable result of racial integration is genocide for the white race through miscegenation. The promotion of miscegenation between white women and colored men is self-evidently a priority in all existing system-approved methods of communication. 3. White men who resist genocidal practices against their race are destroyed economically, politically, and socially. If they continue to effectively resist, they are assassinated or falsely imprisoned. 4. The life of a race is in the wombs of its women. And today, approximately 2% of the Earth's population is white female of childbearing age. This being the essential demographic statistic relative to survival. 5. That economic, political, and religious systems can be destroyed and resurrected, but the death of our race will be eternal. 6. That the instinct of white men to preserve the beauty of their race, their women, and a future for white children on this earth is ordained by nature and nature's God. 7. That all Western nations are ruled by a Zionist conspiracy to mix, overrun, and exterminate the white race. 8. That America is the world Zionist police department. America's military and police powers are used to destroy every white racial state or territorial imperative on the globe. Examples are the forced integration of Southern schools by the 101st Airborne using bayonets, the use of clubs by police under federal edicts to beat and bloody the white mothers of South Boston when they protested the integration and destruction of their neighborhood schools and the destruction of a white racial state in our ancient European homeland through war and subsequent occupation by colored troops. This is after Germany attempted to perform its historic function as defender of the race, as demonstrated against the invading Moors and Mongols. 9. That the denial of jobs to white men through so-called affirmative action and other nefarious schemes, by result, decreases white families and our population. Yes, affirmative action decreases white families and our population. Affirmative action equals genocide of white people. You can't have children if you're not getting the same kinds of jobs as people who don't have the same kind of qualifications as you, but because they're not white get the job, then you're never going to be able to have the same kinds of children that the people who are given a leg up are able to have. This is genocide. Affirmative action equals genocide. Okay, excuse me. I was just getting a little fired up there. Back to the reading. 10. That multiracial sports, entertainment, and integration are designed to destroy the senses of uniqueness and value necessary to the survival of our race. 11. That history is being rewritten to obscure the accomplishments of our ancestors and credit them to colored races. 12. That Judeo-Christianity is dedicated to the concept of racial leveling, the oneness of mankind, and therefore genocide. 13. That the Zionist occupation governments of America and other Western nations promote the unnatural act of homosexuality, knowing full well the power of the male instinct for sexual union must be directed toward procreation with females of the same race to ensure racial survival. 14. That the Zionist occupation governments of America and other Western nations promote and protect infanticide of healthy white babies, now called abortion, immensely to the detriment of the race. In light of these and innumerable crimes against the collective white race, as well as the self-evident policy of genocide, we hereby forswear allegiance or support for our executioners' institutions. In obedience to nature's laws, and recognizing that nature and her laws are the work of God, whatever a man's understanding of the Creator might be, and that the highest law is the preservation of one's own kind, we further demand the formation of exclusive white homelands on the North American continent and in Europe. If denied, then we will seek redress in whatever measures are necessary. Let those who commit treason with the Zionist destroyer or sit on the fence be aware. If we are successful in our goal, expressed in the 14 words, we must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children, then your treachery will be appropriately rewarded. If not, and the white race goes the way of the dinosaurs, then the last generation of white children, including yours, will pay for your vile complicity at the hands of the colored races who will inherit the world. Fear of a black planet, public enemy, starting to make sense how it ties together. Yeah, this is, that's becoming rather evident to me what the plan is, who's doing it, and why it's being done. Though I don't find the reason for that very good. These people hate beauty. They hate excellence. They hate freedom. They do. Your freedom. They like their own. They'll give you a freedom to choose between Pepsi and Coke or fluoridated water. Or you can have Burger King or McDonald's. These are the choices you're given. Democrat, Republican. You have to hate your enemies to be able to truly love your own. And that's why they've programmed us with all of the kind of New Age crap. We're all one. David Icke. One consciousness experiencing itself separately. I do think that there are connective fibers running between all things, that the world is very much connected, but this whole we are all one love and light bullshit is never going to get the enemies of our people to stop genociding us. So that's why you have to really start to consider how to survive. Is it going to be flight? Is it fight? Or is there another option? Hell, I think the easiest way to do it is just settle it. Start a fight. Or actually, hit back. Because we've been getting hit time and again and have just been taking it, apologizing for being punched or stabbed or beheaded or raped or whatever it is in the reality of the situation. Oh, we're so sorry. Oh, we're so sorry that we drove you to that kind of desperation. Oh, honey, let's send some money to the starving kids in Africa. There was a movie that came out a little while ago, before the Kony 2012 shenanigans, which pretty much ended with one of the creators in L.A. naked pounding the pavement. If anybody remembers that, he was basically chimping out. People thought he might have been on bath salts, but this was before that, right before it, pretty much, called Machine Gun Preacher. And actually, it was the guy who played Leonidas in 300, making him look kind of, well, like a Jew instead of like an Aryan like he was. This guy, whatever his name is, he played Machine Gun Preacher in the movie Machine Gun Preacher. And it's about a real-life Christian preacher from America who has been spending a bunch of his money and time fighting the battles against Kony to help secure the existence of more black children. He's building churches and schools for all these black children. It's a real tearjerker. He gets all mad at his daughter when she wants to go to prom or like rent a limo or something. How dare you? Do you know how bad those children over there have it? That was the reason we were always given for, you know, having to finish the plates, right? Finish your plate at dinner. Don't you know there are starving children in Africa? I don't know if my parents ever really gave me that one, but I had definitely heard it. Probably from the television, I would guess. Oh, and who is that? Sally Struthers, who'd always be blubbering about the plight of the poor black people. We don't have enough black people in this world. Let's give them lots of weapons and technology, and we'll give them aid, lots of food. Let's give them health care and make sure we can just give all of our inventions and wealth that once made us fertile and reproductive, let's give it all to them. Let's make sure that every black guy in Africa have at least 8 children. We'll take care of them. No, we have some things we've got to take care of over here. Yeah, of course. But don't worry. We got your back. We got your back. We'll make sure that the population boom of every other country besides white countries is going to just continue unabated. So, obviously, because this is taking place, it is very apparent that we have many traitors, many, many people that need to be dealt with. People have been doing this for a very long time, selling out their very own in order to have a little bit more money in this lifetime, not considering Valhalla, of course, not considering their honor, not considering their grandchildren, their great-great-grandchildren, and the future of our people. No, they just wanted to have a little success here and now. Although I do think we need to be focused on the here and now, it can't be so selfish and exclusive that you sell out your own, your kin. You shouldn't ever have to sell out anyway. Sure, you might have to battle some of your kin sometimes, and that's what we've been doing far too much for the past at least 2,000-3,000 years. But hopefully we can just make it more sporting in the future. And that's what this crisis will inculcate within us, which is the idea that white people have interests, that we are a people, that the Aryan people do exist, no matter how much bullshit they want to put out there that says that there's no such thing. Oh, the Aryan people are a myth. I'm telling you, they say this on the Discovery or History, the Hitler Channel. It's very evident. It's very evident to me that there are such a people known as the Aryan, and it's well documented. Maybe it's just that because that word doesn't appear in the Bible, it doesn't exist. No, it's insanity in which we live so backward. I guess I'll go back to a little bit of reading here. And I'd also like to open up the phone lines. I haven't taken calls in a while. I'll open up the phone lines for the last part of the show here, 347-633-9657. Again, 347-633-9657. Take another drink of water. Back to the book. This is Victory or Valhalla. Although not perfect in terms of some of the type in here, never mind. You'd be able to figure it out. It's good. It was put together, I think, you know, obviously not with the support of some Jewish publishing company. So it's a little bit rough in some places, just like this radio show, this network in general. So deal with it and like it. Okay. Moral authority. As long as the media, in all its aspects, is able to maintain the fraudulent portrayal of moral authority for the political and religious institutions engaged in the murder of the white race, we will continue our headlong plunge toward extinction. Because America is and has been the instrument designed by the world's self-chosen rulers to administer the coup de grace, the final death blow to our race, I have constructed the following short declaration in an attempt to utterly obliterate the executioner's false illusion of moral authority. This letter is to request that you use said declaration as soon and as extensively as possible, because our race is over the abyss. Please send the declaration to friends, to publications, and give it massive exposure on the internet. If you wish to use the declaration within the framework of your own creative writing, please use it complete, as is, because it is designed for maximum effect, emotion, content, and relationship. Oh. Declaration. In the wars, occupations, and revolutions that America has instigated, financed, and participated in, from Dixie to Cuba, to Mexico, to Panama, to Italy, to Germany twice, to Japan, to Korea, to Vietnam, to Iraq, to Iran, to Libya, to Bosnia, to Serbia, to Waco, to Ruby Ridge, and on, the dead and maimed number a bare minimum of 200 million, half of them being white people. In its determination to mix and destroy the integrity of races, nations, and cultures, and particularly to mix, overrun, integrate, miscegenate, reduce by wars, and ultimately exterminate the white race, the red, white, and blue traveling mass murder machine is and has been an engine of Holocaust, genocide, and death, unmatched in human history. As always, the tyrants falsely accuse defeated freedom fighters of the self-same Holocaust tactics which the tyrants employ themselves, thus claiming false moral authority. But observers with personal integrity and uncontaminated reasoning ability... I will read that again. But observers with personal integrity and uncontaminated reasoning ability at look at the big picture, i.e. 200 million Holocaust victims, and recognize that the propaganda of the victors becomes the history of the vanquished. America denies us white nations, white schools, white neighborhoods, white organizations, and everything necessary for racial survival. Then unceasingly promotes interracial mating for what will soon be the last generation of white women. That is deliberate, malicious, conscious genocide. True moral authority belongs to those who resist genocide in obedience to nature's first and highest law, which is the preservation of one's own kind. So, this book is the full compilation of David Lane's writing. It is not too expensive to order. It has almost 500 pages, lots of short essays, easy to get through, and full of lots of interesting thoughts by a very intelligent, dedicated man. It also includes the short story called KD Rebel, which is very interesting, very good. I really enjoyed it. Briefly, KD Rebel is set in the near future, where the white race is on the brinks of extinction, so some of them have decided to go and form Kinsland, which is basically their fortified position in the woods. And they will go, and they're at something of a standoff with the government forces, because for every one of them killed, they killed two of the system's people, such as politicians and whatnot. And also they have some firearms. So they are off in the woods, and what they will do is basically have Viking raids. And they are wotanists, of course, like David Lane would want them to be, teaching the 88 precepts to their children, raising them correctly. But they will raid the different places, specifically looking for the places outside that are hostile towards them. They will go and take white women and bring them back, re-educate them, and make them their women. And it's at the outset, you might say, oh, that's barbaric. But the way that this story is told, the way it's framed, it makes all the sense in the world. They take two strippers out of a Jew's a strip joint and bring them to Kinsland. Because the few remaining women in that society would never want to go. They're given such attention, kind of like Paris Hilton type celebrity status, especially if they are, you know, race mixers themselves. They're just viewed as so cool and, you know, heaped with drugs and all and fine clothes and everything. But it's the last of them. And they don't want to leave. They're told all these horror stories about, you know, what goes on at Kinsland, that it's, you know, they're raping and killing and pillaging, kind of the same negative stereotypes about the Vikings today that were given by the Jewish media about their raping and pillaging of the poor, loving Christians. So The story follows these characters through what happens and how the system outside collapses, and eventually it looks like the seeds of their new society are born out of that chaos when everybody else is just killing each other. They've already set up their fortified position, have a basic fundamental outlook on life. They have the means necessary for their survival, not dependent on a globalist system that is interconnected all over, and you never even know how to do anything for yourself, how to repair anything, how to build anything. You only know how to get cheap products from China. So they've been doing this hard work, fighting the good fight. And instead of kidnapping, they call it rescuing of the remaining white women and bringing them into their community. And this story was very reflective, I think, of the time in which David Lane was struggling when he wrote it, because just as it is now for the most part, but it's changing, women wanted nothing to do with a racist, with somebody who was going to talk about black crime or Jews or any of these things. This is very taboo. This is because the media says so. No one will touch it, and those who do are ostracized. And so a man who loved white women was really unable to have any of them, or have many of them, as many as he probably would have liked. And he had some interesting thoughts on women, as is evidenced by at least the plural marriage within the book between some of the characters. It's an option that's available within this society, which and it would be a very interesting way to live. Sounds rather compelling. But instead of dwelling on that for too long, I would just hope that you guys would be interested enough to read it. I'm going to go to his piece here called Sex and Women, since no one has called in yet. So here we go. Sex and Women. It is the first necessity for reproduction and preservation of a species. It is a preoccupation of men and women alike. It is the driving instinct of males. Sex is used to sell everything from automobiles to zircons. It is a woman's power and a man's curse. It is the catalyst in the battle of the sexes. It both unites and divides, bringing both pleasure and pain. It unleashes emotion too powerful for logic or reason to control, yet it is vital to life. It is a misused tool of merchants, priest crafters, and state crafters. Without a natural outlet, a misdirected sex drive can lead to all manner of neurosis and conflict. Sex is perhaps the single most important subject that those who struggle for the life of our people should understand. Yet due to centuries of mind poisoning from alien religions, most are unable to discuss sex with total frankness. But the taboo must be broken. The question begs to be asked. Is the natural way and the upward path even possible in the modern, industrialized world? Self-evidently, the natural way and the upward path are impossible within nation-states ruled by those dedicated to the mixing and extermination of the race which created so-called Western civilization. In olden times, a woman taught her daughters, "'Tis far better to be mistress of a king than wife of a servant." Of course, in those days, kingship was determined by valor and other valuable genetic traits, like cunning and determination. So a woman knew that if her child were sired by a king or other nobility, the chances were greater that her offspring would develop into exceptional individuals. In this foul age, when the kings of the earth are usurers, word twisters, and degenerates, the olden ways do not apply. The systems under which we live are craftily constructed so that the white folk who obey the instincts given them by nature find that obedience to authority, to law, to religious precepts, or to sociably acceptable mores is racial suicide,
And by nature, most Aryans are not anarchists. In the cold climes of the North, social cooperation was necessary for survival. When living exclusively among our own kind with benevolent leaders, acceptance of higher authority was then our greatest strength. Conversely, however, in a multiracial society ruled by Zionists, acceptance of authority is the Achilles heel of our race. It leads us to fraternal wars, acceptance of genocidal practices like forced busing, and the insanity of a statement like, "My country, right or wrong." Because we are by nature an open and honest people, we assume that others are like us, and this makes us the most gullible race on earth. The minds of the masses are almost exactly analogous to blank computer disks, which can be programmed however the operator desires. Years ago, I was with Bob Matthews in a large city. We saw a white girl get off a bus. She was flirting with two Negro boys. While we felt great anger surge through us, our anger should not be directed at her. For that little girl, feel sadness. From the time she was a toddler, she has been programmed by teachers, preachers, TV, radio, magazines, movies, songs, and every influence in her life that race mixing was noble. Could she be expected to make a judgment contrary to her entire perceived world? Anger should be directed at the programmers. The programming carries into every aspect of the lives of the masses, both male and female. If young girls are taught that being cheerleaders, wives, and mothers is a praiseworthy life, then this is what will make them happy and fulfilled. But if they are programmed to believe such lives are demeaning, and that careers as soldiers, construction workers, police, firemen, lawyers, and the like are fulfilling, then they will demand and follow the feminine agenda. Excuse me, the feminist agenda. Men are equally susceptible to programming, so we see them fixated on multiracial athletics, on artificial political systems, and so on. It was in recognition that minds are programmable that our ancestors built fertility rites into our organic and indigenous religions, realizing that reproduction is nature's divine command for the preservation of our race. All of the above serves as a necessary preface to what follows, because while we have precious few women dedicated to our cause, the few we do have are so extremely valuable that they must not be alienated. Nevertheless, it is, always has been, and forever will be, male testosterone that decides all things. The male sex drive of a race that would survive must never be diminished, thwarted, misdirected, or slandered. History shows that from the dawn of time, those out of power raised armies with the promise of plunder and the seizing of women. Those exceptional women who already share our cause do not need to react in horror at the word seize with visions of rape and mistreatment. It is the duty of the Aryan male to treat women with chivalry, whether they come voluntarily or are captured. When this discourse speaks of the masses of either women or men, the exception should not take umbrage. The mind of the exceptional man or woman is as different from that of the masses as night is from day. The unenlightened masses are asses, dangerous asses, but nonetheless asses. So do not judge yourselves by them. Bearing this in mind, let us plunge into the battle of the sexes with total frankness and brutal honesty. The great hermetic, or nature, philosophers have taught throughout history that the creative force and intelligence, whatever that means to you, formed all we perceive as duality, light and dark, hot and cold, positive and negative, male and female. Existence, as we know it, requires polarity, and by extrapolation, the tension or struggle that results. Indeed, life would be true hell or a living death without competition. Be it war, a golf tournament, or the battle of the sexes, the joy is in the struggle. On a false intellectual level, we can speak of the equilibrium of peace, but it is sugar-coated deception, whether in the realms of religion, politics, sex, or anything else. An eternity of sitting on a cloud singing, "Jesus loves me," would be a torture just a step behind the Christian alternative lifestyle called hell. True pleasure comes from struggle, from achieving, from accomplishments, which require time, effort, and sacrifice. So why would anyone think the battle of the sexes would be different? The word battle is absolutely appropriate, and those who would abstain from the contest deserve neither life nor pleasure. In a primitive and natural society, the strongest or otherwise most successful male captures the most females and the most desirable females. Thus, the greater share of the best genes are passed along for the strength, beauty, and preservation of the race. In species with social structures, the female then attempts to tame the male who has captured her. This she must do in order that the hunting and providing skill of the male will aid her offspring. Few of us today would want to return to a society as rugged as in ages past. Although we have reached the ridiculous in pursuit of plastic gadgets, not many would give up flush toilets, anesthesia, electricity, housing, and other things that require cooperation in a social structure. However, the basic instincts given by nature do not change. The tension between male and female does not end with a ceremony, a pronouncement of marriage, or a sanction by artificial entities like church and state. May the gods forbid it, for the absence of tension and struggle is found only in death. Scientists have been telling us for years that the sperm count of white males is dropping, and why not? The brain is the largest sex organ, even though symbolically it is common to judge a man with the hoary phrase, he has a lot of balls. The white male has been effectively castrated by subtle feminist and Zionist poison that has infected all our people of both sexes. The male is meant to capture females, not beg for their favors like some whipped spaniel. In our now alien-occupied countries, a man woos a woman with promises of material goods, with $60 or $100 bouquets of flowers. He is an emasculated idiot. Jewish movie producers, magazine editors, television network owners, stockbrokers, bankers, lawyers, and assorted billionaires offer the most beautiful of our young women the world on a platter. So oftentimes in this society it's Jews, and now it's minorities offering our young, beautiful women the world on a platter as we are made to look like buffoons. Like fools, the butt of every joke. Continuing. Sports cars, penthouses, roles as movie starlets, as centerfolds, buckets of money, jewelry, glitter, and adulation awaits any pretty white girl. We who are racially aware and active can offer them poverty and the chance to share in the abuse heaped upon our heads. We can attempt to reason with our beautiful women until blue in the face and they will reply with the buzzwords racist and sexist. Neither human nature nor female nature have changed. As long as the destroyer owns the media, the money, the military, and the minds of the masses, our slide to extinction will continue and accelerate. Until our males realize that death in battle is far better than the slow death of racial extinction or the mental torture of watching our women be defiled, there is no hope. Until thousands emulate Bob Matthews, the enemy will laugh at our own feeble efforts. Until white men show the courage of our ancestors and do whatever it takes, welcoming what awaits on the other side, there is no chance of victory. Only a people whose males accept and welcome death over slavery can be free. Again, males are designed to capture females, not beg for their favors. Males of the same species put aside their rivalries over females when necessary for hunting or defense of the tribe or race. But once external threats are over, the competition must resume, for nature declares the best should reproduce the most. Whether that means polygamy is decreed by nature is a subject for legitimate debate. That strong and lasting bonds are often formed in monogamous pairing is evident. Equally evident is that social systems of the last two centuries and last two millennia have been disastrous for the Aryan race. In the final analysis, we must remember that allowing the meddlers of church or state to dictate sexual relationships or marital affairs opens doors to endless tyranny. Decisions must be made by individuals based on personal circumstances, folkish needs, common sense, and the conditions imposed by external factors of the age. True Aryan men, of course, recognize their duty to provide for and protect their wives and children. By conditioning and false intellectualization, the modern woman convinces herself she should own one man rather than be the possession of a superior man. But the fire fades, the spark dies, her orgasms are weak and faked, because once a man is tamed, the natural attraction is gone. He is now her working drone. She no longer needs to compete with other women. In her heart of hearts, she despises her man, while her innermost being longs to be taken by a dominant male. Her sexual nature is sublimated, and she adopts any false and destructive doctrine that captures her attention. Preachers and anti-nature religion become her substitute masters. Jewelry, makeup, possessions, universalist social causes become obsessions. Mindless sophistries turned to slogans become her code of life. Cats and dogs substitute for children. Her instincts are denied. One only has to look at the groupies who flock around rock stars, movie stars, and sports figures to see that the instincts given by nature never change. These groupies know full well they are but one of many in the virtual harem of such public figures. Degenerate though these figures may be, they are perceived as extraordinary by the groupies who desire them. Part of the battle of the sexes is a woman's need to be recognized as valuable. In the natural world, that means, first of all, sex appeal, especially for young women. A woman is in competition with other women. The book Might is Right proclaims that women dislike and distrust each other intensely. Women authors have written the same thing. Whether true or not, the competition is real. Men lust for women. Women, in turn, can meet the competition of other women by sharpening their weapons of war or by attempting to tame a man. The former is good. The latter she will inevitably try in this unnatural age to her material benefit but sexual frustration. A man cherishes what he desires and for which he has labored or struggled to attain. While there are exceptions to most rules, a man does not mistreat that which he cherishes. So a wise woman keeps herself desirable. Virtually all white women are blessed with natural beauty and attraction. Aryan women keep their beauty until late in life if they keep fit. Inevitably, youthful beauty fades with age. No one can change that, but there is no greater treasure to a man than a woman old enough to be a companion, yet with the discipline to keep herself attractive. Hopefully, men having such a woman will appreciate her. Women should not be deceived that jewelry makes them attractive. Neither does nail polish, pancake makeup, fancy hairstyling, or gaudy clothes. These artificial devices serve to enrich Jewish coffers and as an ill-conceived attempt to impress or depress other women. Nature made sex enjoyable to ensure propagation and preservation of the species. Men without the courage to fight for women, either as individuals or as a race, do not deserve the pleasure of sex. Because of the long time it takes to rear and nurture our offspring, nature made sex a pleasure, even when not specifically for conception, so enjoy. The alien religions made sex as a sin, a major part of their doctrine. They made it the insane idea of original sin, because sex is unavoidable for survival of the race. Priestcrafters needed an unavoidable sin from which to save the sheeple. It is all a lie. Sex is both duty and pleasure. In our indigenous religion, sex was elevated to the status of a sacrament. The marital or sexual affairs or arrangements of the folk are not the business of government or guilt-laying priests. Bear in mind that the primal law and moral absolute is preservation of one's own kind and will provide a guide to proper sexual mores. Then enter the battle of the sexes with all the joy that competition is meant to bring. So that will be my last stream for the night. 10 minutes left in this stream here. And if you would still like to call in, please do so. I will take it. 347-633-9657. Let me know what you think about this. challenge me if you don't like what I'm saying. If I missed something, if I'm on the wrong track, tell me. If you want to bring up some other information, let's hear it. I think that people who are involved in this struggle right now are going to find that men and women alike now are realizing that we are in some serious trouble. So the men who battle now for our race will be seen as heroes. And that is something that we need to be channeling. We need to have our women out there listening know that the best way that they can help our cause is to ensure that their men feel a sense of responsibility to do something about our situation, and that that their contributions are valued rather than not being supportive of such things. Because the support of a woman is very important. It's great. It's great to know you have a woman or women on your side, that they're, that they're comforting you, that they're enriching your life, that they are really adding the necessary component to the preservation of our people. All right, a call here.
Hello, how are you doing? Is it Todd or who am I talking
to? You're calling into my show and you don't know who you're talking with?
It's Mike Sledge or Kyle Hunt?
It's Kyle Hunt.
Okay, nice to meet you. No, I don't really know. I guess I just came home from town. I was really drunk and I was listening to you and I decided to call in.
All right, well, yeah, thanks for calling, but I'm going to mute you because if you haven't been listening to the show, I really don't have much to say to you. And enjoy being drunk, but I don't have time for that right now. And try calling into another show if you'd like. Something interesting that I saw over at mindweaponsinragnarok.com. Right now it's at the top. It's Big Brother's Erin Gries, all her ancestors were racist, and so is she. That's the title. And it's about how this woman, a model, Erin Gries, I don't know how you say her name, because it's A-A-R-Y-N, and her last name is G-R-I-E-S. Her first name is obviously an anagram of Aryan. Pretty much says Aryan right there, but she made some racist and homophobic comments, so was kicked off of the show. What was it? Big Brother? What was? Yeah. Yeah, Big Brother. What an appropriately named show, right? She was kicked off. This was right around when the Paula Deen thing was going down, too. So you had Erin Gries being kicked off of Big Brother. And also another cast member was kicked off. Her name was Gina Marie Zimmerman. Last name Zimmerman. At the same time that this whole trial is going on, right? Because she made racist statements that just came out of nowhere, it seems. Very interesting. But perhaps having this blue-eyed blonde model, this Erin Gries, being racist will actually get some people to feel a little bit less threatened by the PC crowd. Yeah, the message is that you'll get kicked off, you'll get fired. That's what they're trying to send with Paula Deen and Erin Gries right here, right? But I think it should be empowering. I think it's really good to see some women who aren't afraid of being white, being themselves, being beautiful. All right, if anybody else wants to call in, I still got a few minutes here, 347-633-9657. If you don't have anything intelligent to say, I really don't have time to take your call because you're only trying to lessen the power of my broadcast.
I guess it's a good time to give station identification, which should be renegadebroadcasting.com, not iCunt like like Mike was promoting before. IK Hunt. Yeah, no, it is IK Hunt. Station identification. So, thank you all out there for tuning in on this Friday, listening to me discuss this very, very important issue that I feel is so important to be discussed right here and right now, and something that we need to act on. Now, I think that if we view this world as something like if we understand the way it works, that the only way to get a big gain is to take serious risks, and that might result in death, and that's fine. But I would much rather take it a somewhat dangerous course right now, with the potential for great reward for myself, but more importantly for all of us, then that is what I'm going to do. And anything less is just leading a comfortable life of death. And I will never feel fulfilled. I don't know how you feel about it out there, but I am looking to do something great. I am looking to be someone great. And so I'm going to hold myself to a higher standard. I hope you all do too. And you take it upon yourself to really do all that you can to be the best you can be and to fight the hardest that you can fight in this struggle here before us. So, again, thank you all out there for listening. We've got the great lineup here. Myself on Monday, I've got a show coming up. Lou on Tuesday, Dana on Wednesday, Mike on Thursday, Siegfried on Friday, the Roundtable on Saturday, and David in Texas on Sunday. So to all of the people out there who are listening who could be labeled anti-whites, I say your days are numbered. We will not have compassion for you as you have seeked. You've strived to exterminate our great race. Strived. Yes. All right. I'm just trying to get a song queued up here. I told you, this is not, the production value is not why you come to this radio station, iCunt Radio. You don't come here for the production value. You come here for the information. You come here for the inspiration, for knowledge, for entertainment, for it all. So, with that, I am out.
Your banner.